You're listening to Radio MD. She's a chiropractic holistic physician, best-selling author, international speaker, entrepreneur, and talk show host. She's Dr. Suzanne Bennett. It's time now for Wellness for Life Radio. Here's Dr. Suzanne.
Earlier this summer, I was fortunate enough to attend the Society of Oxidative and Photonic Medicine Conference in Snowbird, Utah. And I must say that my favorite lecture of the weekend was given by Dr. Zach Bush, one of the few triple board certified physicians in the country who specializes in internal medicine, endocrinology and metabolism, as well as hospice and palliative care. Now, not only was his talk truly inspiration, but he shared some incredible new research on chronic inflammation and its role in intestinal permeability issues, commonly known as leaky gut. I'm so grateful to have him as our guest here today on Wellness for Life Radio. Hey, welcome, Dr. Bush.
Dr. Suzanne, thank you so much for what you do and having me on board.
Absolutely. You know, in my book, The 70 Allergy Makeover, you know, I went into many of the different root causes of food and environmental allergies and how chronic inflammation reactions are triggered by the wrong foods we eat, tap water, chemicals that we're consuming and put into our bodies. And, you know, that we all know more than 50 million Americans suffer from allergies each year, Dr. Bush, and the numbers are keep on climbing. Now, I'd love to hear your take on why people are getting sicker these days. Like, why are they more symptomatic, more severe, more anaphylactic reactions?
Absolutely. What we're seeing is a real acceleration of the aging process. To get to the point where you're manifesting a disorder or a disease, such as an environmental sensitivity, allergy, or an immune chronic inflammatory process, whether that's something like arthritis or a neurodegenerative thing like Alzheimer's dementia or Parkinson's, this whole spectrum from autism in our children to Alzheimer's in our elderly, this whole spectrum is really driven by that inflammatory process. And so our science group here in Virginia has been working for the last 5 years to really delve into what is that root cause, what has happened in our environment and in our bodies to produce this sort of epidemic growth and disease. You know, autism at 1 in 5,000 children affected in 1975. Now we're at 1 in 42. We're expected to be at 1 in 2 children affected by 2032 at our current trajectory. So a truly astonishing rise in these chronic inflammatory diseases affecting first the gut and then the brain. And so that, the answer in a nutshell comes down to what you mentioned, which is permeability. Our front lines of defense are collapsing. The membranes, the macro membranes that make up our body, the largest one being our gut membrane, are really starting to become extremely vulnerable to injury from our environment, and once injured, lead to a leak phenomenon where our immune system is getting inundated and resulting in chronic inflammation.
So, you know, just to be clear, you know, all the things that you talked about are the different types of conditions out there, autism, a lot of the autoimmune conditions, all these chronic illnesses is really due to the breakdown of the gut mucosal lining and the microbiome. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that's right. What we've worked on is the relationship between the bacterial biome or ecosystem and that permeability and understanding the relationships. And this was all engineered in retrospect because we are not smart enough as a group to have figured all this out prospectively. All of the big breakthroughs in science, I think, in history really come out of accidents and happy accidents being in the right time at the right place. And that's definitely what happened here. My background was in cancer research. I was working on mitochondria, which you've written a lot about. And these are kind of not only the fuel plant inside the cell, but more recently in the last 10 years, we've come to realize that these guys are really producing the communication network of redox molecules or positive and negative charge molecules inside the cells. So that was my background. And I didn't know a darn thing about nutrition. I didn't know anything about the gut. And started to realize in my clinical management of diabetes that nutrition was probably going to play an important role, and I hadn't been taught anything in nutrition. Ended up leaving the UVA system in 2010, the university system, and starting a nutrition clinic for chronic disease management in 2010. And in our first couple of years there, we realized that even healthy foods were not having the correct response in our patients. A lot of our patients were getting worse, not better, despite really healthy diets. And this was driving us down an avenue to better understand the world of plants and the substrate they grow in, which is obviously the soil. And so we were poring through some soil science articles and just flipped a page, and sitting in the middle of this page was something that struck me as being extremely similar in biologic function to the chemotherapy compounds that I'd been creating before. And so that was definitely one of those stopping points in a career where you're like, "What? How did that get into soil? What made that thing?" And after a couple more months of research, we found out that it was actually bacteria making those guys. And what they look like is a communication network, but of a whole different ilk than is made by the mitochondria. And suddenly it made a lot of sense that the bacteria, which are single-celled organisms, therefore lacking mitochondria, were going to have to produce a communication network through their own metabolism or metabolic breakdown and fuel production. And so we discovered that family of molecules. There's probably over a million variants of these little guys. So we call them carbon snowflakes in the lab just because it's, I think, an apt description of a situation where each molecule is slightly different than the next in a lot of situations. And so that communication network is what we found. And by doing so, I think we found the unifying reason why the bacteria and our disrespect for those bacteria over the years has led to this gut permeability and vulnerability that we have at the tight junction system or the membrane integrity system.
You know, what it sounds like is that what you're talking about is the metabolome, the metabolic, extracts, the terrain that the bacteria live in. That's what you've discovered. Is that correct?
Yeah, exactly. It's so cool that nature does this. There's no waste in nature. You know, in human life, we create trash out of every household in America all the time. There is no trash at the cellular level. Everything is used. And so all these metabolites are breakdown products that are made in the digestion of food by bacteria or the macronutrient processing by mitochondria. All those breakdown products not only are non-harmful, they're actually extremely critical and useful tools and vocabulary for cell-cell function, cell repair, all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, you know, it just reminds me of some of the work that I just researched a long time ago, like 15 years ago, and it was specifically on the environment of soil. When you look at like a tree that's, you know, sick, and you have to, all farmers know, you've got to go into the soil. You've got to look at what's the properties of the soil, what are the chemicals in the soil. And I think that's what you're talking about. You're saying that our microbiome is pretty much the soil of our gut. Isn't that right? You're not just looking at what's in it, bugs that are living in it, but where it's living, the terrain of the actual soil. That I'm seeing that. I'm kind of like visioning it right now.
You're spot on. Yeah, the bacteria are what take your food scraps and turn them into compost. And so you're making soil out of your food scraps in your backyard if you've got a compost pile. Same thing is happening in a healthy human gut. You're taking your food, turning it into compost. And yes, the bacteria, the fungi, all of the species that are dwelling in that humus layer of the soil or your gut are extremely critical to the ecosystem. But as critical is the actual organic material being produced in the process of that metabolic breakdown. So you're exactly right. The soil is really the substrate that is going to deliver the minerals and the nutrients that are necessary for life. And the bacteria are really there to deliver it.
Now, we've had a lot of experts come on the show, talk about the gut microbiome and, you know, how to heal the gut, what to eat, what to stay away from, et cetera. I'd like to know your clinical experience and what you found are your best strategies for a healthy microbiome.
Absolutely. Step one is don't kill the microbiome. And that's become very difficult. We now are all, whether in the lay public or steeped in medical science, we are all very aware of the prevalence of antibiotics in our environment. And when the consumer thinks about antibiotics, often we think, okay, yeah, my doctor prescribes antibiotics, et cetera, et cetera. Well, most of the antibiotics you're exposed to actually are never prescribed by your doctor. These are used as herbicides and pesticides or weed killers and bug killers out in your agricultural environment that end up on your plate. And so the herbicides and pesticides are designed to literally be antimicrobial. The most prevalent of these is glyphosate, which is a chemical that is the active ingredient in Roundup and just about every other leading industry weed killer. Obviously, this really got out of hand when we created the genetically modified crops that were Roundup ready. We could suddenly spray corn, soybean, etc. with the Roundup chemical without killing it. It would kill the weeds, but not the corn. This was, you know, a panacea for farmers in a lot of ways, but the downside is we're starting to consume in our diet by 1996 huge quantities of this compound that was literally has been patented as an antimicrobial, antibiotic, antifungal. And so we're spraying now over 1.2 billion pounds of this chemical into our global soils every year. That volume doubles every 6 years. And so it's a truly stunning number of an antibiotic toxin that's ending up in your food, in your water, in very high concentrations in milk products, unfortunately in breast milk now, measurable at very high quantities. The dairy industry, et cetera. So we're just surrounded by this stuff in the food industry. But perhaps a bigger problem is we've used so much of this in the ecosystem now that we have about 70% of the rainfall testing positive in the U.S. for this stuff now. So just an amazing inundation. And so it's one thing to say, well, you should eat healthy to have a good microbiome. Well, if you're living in the United States, it's becoming very difficult to avoid those the pressures of these chemicals that are wiping out the bacterial biome. And so step one, always eat organic as much as possible. If you're not, I'm sure your program has talked about it, but one useful government website that is out there is the Clean 15 and the Dirty Dozen. If you Google Clean 15, Dirty Dozen, the website will pop up. It's a government website. It shows you those 12 crops that are most contaminated with herbicides and pesticides in the agricultural industry. And those are the ones you really need to make sure you're getting organic. And those include, you know, strawberries, apples, cucumbers, a lot of the common ones that your kids and families are eating. And so go to that website, start eating organic as much as you can. First of all, the organic purchasing, you know, makes a good decision for your home. But perhaps more importantly, it's continuing to force an industry to change. In 1995, very few people were thinking organic. Now consumers across all socioeconomic spectrums are starting to think organic is important. So there's lots of really wonderful political and social political things that happen when you buy organic. So get away from the antibiotics, eat organic, I would say are two of your first steps. The third step, just to try to wrap this up so I don't talk all day, cause this is my passion here, but the third step then is to get as much variety in the diet as possible, and that's by color. And so if you can make sure you've got the rainbow on your plate every day, the red beets and the orange carrots and the white jicama, and you got as much color and variety on that plate as possible, by having as many micronutrients in that array of foods, you're going to require your body to adapt and create or proliferate the bacteria that will then handle that whole spectrum. So you'll create biodiversity just by creating diversity on the plate.
Those are great tips for us to all follow. But, you know, I want to tell you, I was in Korea just about 3 weeks ago, Dr. Bush, and over there, noodles, and particularly wheat noodles, are in every meal they eat. I was just floored how many Korean people, they are just really attracted to wheat and pastries and bread and all of that, you know, and every one of them looks so healthy. It's really mind-boggling. Where in America, you know, you have those types of foods. We've got obesity. We've got people who are very sick. They look sick. So what do you think is going on in different countries like Korea?
A lot of those island countries have really actually decided to really cut down on the amount of glyphosate allowed into their countries. And so there's a lot of regulatory decisions being made, and they haven't adopted a lot of the farming practices yet that we have in the U.S. Our wheat got contaminated in 1992. So in 1992, northern climate farmers started using Roundup to kill their wheat prematurely. And this is really, our group is, I think, the first to really prove why this was so damaging. But what we've been showing is that gluten is a naturally occurring potential toxin to that tight junction system that keeps your gut membrane intact. And so when you eat gluten, you have the potential to start leaking at the membrane. However, about 10 times stronger than the gluten is the glyphosate chemical that we talked about just a few minutes ago, which is the Roundup. And the glyphosate is about 10 times more potent in parts per million on that membrane. And so when you add gluten and glyphosate together, there's a big synergy of there. And we have a peer-reviewed journal article coming out in just a couple weeks on that synergy. But coming out just yesterday in the Journal of Nutrition and Food Sciences, we have a peer-reviewed published article that just came out yesterday there showing that that gluten-mediated tight junction injury and the effects of this bacterial communication network to protect against that injury. And so step one, gluten became a problem for us when we started killing our own bacteria. When we lost our biome, we became vulnerable to that injury. Then in 1992, we started spraying the wheat with the toxin that would act through the same pathway to damage the tight junction, cause leaky gut, and all the rest. And so we've created the perfect storm at the gut lining by having a lot of refined gluten products in play that are contaminated with residues of glyphosate. And so we have a two-hit injury in the U.S. And so I think if you go over to Korea, you're going to find that there's perhaps more biome, more ecosystem available in their guts. They're more resilient to the gluten. And then second of all, their gluten is probably not contaminated with the levels of glyphosate that we have here in the U.S.
I think you're absolutely correct, because we all know what kimchi is. And I, for one, I was born in Korea before I came to the States. And we ate kimchi from the pretty much as soon as we can walk. We've been eating kimchi, which is loads of fermentation, loads of good bacteria, probiotics. But I think also, I remember hearing like last year that there was a big scare in Korea. They actually sent back a ton of corn. I believe there was corn that they found was GMO corn loaded with glyphosate. So they're very careful what they put into the country. So I think you're absolutely right in that their wheat is different. They grow it there, I'm sure, and the laws of bringing those types of toxic foods is really important for them. And then, of course, that microbiome of probiotics, right? I mean, they eat the types of fermented foods. They've got a kimchi museum there, in fact, with hundreds of different types of fermented foods. It's really amazing
how the
Asian culture has really opened that up.
Every people group had some sort of fermented food that was really a staple in their food chain up until about the 1950s and 60s when refrigeration became so common. And that's when we started to phase out the home fermentation. I mean, pickles used to be fermented. Now they're just refrigerated pickles that are thrown some vinegar and they call them a pickle. But fermented foods, sauerkraut, et cetera, I mean, these were staples, and it only takes one or two tablespoons of some of those fermented foods to get an incredible microbiome established and supported on a daily basis. And the cool thing about the kimchi is that it's much different than a probiotic. You had mentioned the probiotics, but the probiotics we take here, there was a great NPR spot last week, not to push another radio program, but a great NPR program really outlining the fact that we have almost no data to suggest, well, we have no data to suggest that long-term use of probiotics is a good idea. There's really no health benefits that have been demonstrated. Short-term benefits have been shown in a few small studies for some very specific conditions, but we have consumers that are buying probiotics thinking they're doing something good for themselves when it's pretty dubious. And if you look at the difference between kimchi and a probiotic, you kind of get at that. As a probiotic, you're looking at 3 species or 7 species of bacteria. If you're looking at a wild fermented kimchi, you're looking at hundreds and hundreds of species that are introduced through the air to that kimchi that then ferment that. And so your good wild fermented kimchis are going to be pretty amazing. A little push for a family, indirect family member. I got some Korean family up in Chicago that make Kimchicago. And that is some fantastic wild fermented stuff right there. So check out Kimchicago online. But
That sounds great.
It's fantastic.
You know, I'm going to that fermentation festival you're going to be speaking at.
Yeah,
you know,
we got
the one
a big
Santa Barbara
Fermentation Festival next week. Very excited about it. Brilliant farmers there, brilliant food producers, unbelievable chefs. The chefs in the U.S. are really figuring this stuff out, and they're really getting creative at bringing back in the fermented foods. They're at Santa Barbara. If you're in the Midwest Coast there, you got to check it out next week. Santa Barbara Fermentation Festival. One of the chefs there, that's my favorite, does this whole line of non-dairy cheeses that are fermented just beautifully. And so there's a cashew cheese and almond cheese that's amazing. Just some beautiful work. So check that one out for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to be going there. You're going to be speaking, right?
Yes. Yeah, I'll be speaking almost all day. I think it's Friday and Saturday next week.
That's great. That's great. All right. I'm excited for that. So, you know what? I want to go into some of this science that you and your scientists discovered about this lignite extract. I know about it because I started taking this formula called Restore that you've created. And I want to talk about that because I've started using it with my patients and I'm getting really great results with it. Can you explain about what lignite extract is? We talked a bit about a little bit earlier regarding that metabolite, the metabolome of bacteria. Can you explain more about it?
Absolutely. So when we discovered in 2012 that the bacteria could talk and speak between each other's species, we had a pretty immediate hunch that they would be able to speak to the human system as well, because there was already a lot of science showing that some bacteria in the gut will cause breast cancer, or the lack of bacteria will cause colon cancer. So we had some connections already. We just didn't know how they were connected. And so when we found this communication network of these carbon metabolites from the bacteria, we were pretty sure we had just stumbled upon the connecting blocks there. And so then the question was, well, where are we going to get these carbon molecules from? Because right now it's pretty hard to find healthy soil on Earth. And so the answer quickly became old soil. And so we went to the desert and in the southwest United States, and you can dig down very few feet in the desert where there's been very little deposition of sediment over time. And within a few feet, you're hitting soil that's 60 to 80 million years old. And it's from those soil layers that we are extracting this bacterial information. Imagine the depth of the topsoil that thrived 60 million years ago with the dinosaurs that would then compress over 60 million years to a layer of topsoil that's now fossil that's still 8 feet thick. And so I don't know how many dozens or hundreds of feet deep that soil was, but it was something that we have not witnessed in human lifespans as to its richness. And so it's fascinating when you start taking this. Lignite is a technical term for the fossil layer of soil there. And so we're extracting these bacterial communication network from those fossil soils. And we're not the first, you know, group of scientists to extract stuff from soil. The Chinese have been doing it for hundreds of years, doing different soil extracts for mineral supplements and stuff. But in this case, we're not going after the minerals. This time we're going after these carbon molecules made by the bacteria. And we're showing much different biologic effects with that. And so the other ones on the market that have been extracted from soil, probably the oldest one is maybe Shilajit, S-H-I-L-J-I-T, I think is spelling on that. The Shilajit is an old Indian preparation. It's an extract of fossil soil for mineral supplementation. There's a lot of issues with toxicity to Shilajit. There's been issues with contamination. There's been frank fraud where people say this is Shilajit and it's actually chalk and other harmful chemicals, other things. So there's been some issues there. But Shilajit's a mineral supplement. Humic acid and fulvic acid are some of the ones that are more common in the United States. Those are, again, our mineral supplements that are available. The issue is we've shown that those all have quite a bit of kidney toxicity potential to them because they're so acidic and they carry a very unbalanced charged molecule family within them. And so we, in our own assays that we run head-to-head with our lignite extracts, we see quite a bit of toxicity on the kidney tubules. The nice thing about the lignite extracts we're working from is we've been able to get rid of a lot of those more noxious pHs and everything else. Our lignite extract that is in the product Restore, that's running at a pH of 8.8 instead of the very acidic kind of pHs of 2.5 to 4.5 that you're seeing in fulvic acids and things like that. So very alkaline pH, and that creates a totally different charge environment. And then we use a process here in Virginia. We make every bottle here in our laboratories. And what happens with that process is you get a different oxygen-hydrogen binding that creates this very neutral compound. We've now taken this lignite extract up to 50% concentrations on cell membranes, renal tubules, liver cells, and there's no toxicity. So one of the safest compounds we've ever worked around. what this stuff does when you put this communication network back together is it's actually in, or into biologic systems, is it starts that communication going. And so one of the cool things is we're working with a compound here that doesn't treat anything. It simply puts into play a communication network that allows your body to do what it does best every day, which is heal. The body is healing all the time, no matter what you're doing. You're injuring yourself all the time, and you've got a compensatory repair process going. But one of the most important biologic effects that we've shown tie right into the whole story we've been talking over the last half hour, which is when you get the bacterial metabolites back on those cell membranes, those tight junctions, which are a lot like Velcro that hold all the cells together, those Velcro-like tight junctions become extremely resilient, and they increase in number. Within minutes, we see an increase in number of these things. Within 30, 60 minutes, starting to increase. By 6 days, you have levels of these tight junction expression that we've just never seen before in cell culture. So really exciting levels of integrity there. And they become very, very resilient.
I know that, you know, since we've been using it in our office the last few months, it's been really powerful. The formula is called Restore, and you can get it at Restore for Life, and that's the number 4, life.com, Restore for Life. I've had great results. My patients can feel it. Sometimes within a day or two, they start to see, wow, I can tell the inflammation's going down in my gut. My stomach doesn't hurt as much when I eat. And it's been really powerful. Really appreciate you being here, Dr. Bush. I can't wait to see you at the Fermentation Festival. And again, Dr. Zach Bush by restoreforlife.com. And thanks so much. Really appreciate it. Okay, this is Dr. Suzanne sharing natural strategies for ultimate health and wellness right here on Radio ND. Until next time, stay well.